gotta tell you, this is the most disturbing season of Doctor Who I've ever seen.
His new companion doesn't seem like she wants to be there.
Well, sometimes.
And you would have thought that, you know, him going back into stalking Martha Jones because she's the one that got away.
Still less annoying than Rose.
What?
Okay, let's not go there. We're not going there.
No, you know who was the most annoying companion?
Who?
The kid from Broadchurch who died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Roderick?
I'm realizing now that I've made a huge miscalculation on the start of this.
No, let's get to the point. We are talking about Jessica Jones, and so we have marshaled all of the female forces on the One of Us site. Say hi, Sarah.
Yay! I'm here.
Well, there's a lot of us here. In fact, we pulled in Dr. Nerdlove as well, because there's certainly a lot of stuff to talk to, talk about with the series that's in his wheelhouse.
Yes.
And
Google. So we all have our own expertise here.
Yeah, I'm here. Well, just some of us.
Randy is here.
I'm here.
Herman is here.
Hello.
You've already met Sarah.
Well, I'm the one with the vagina, so I know everything about everything to do with this.
And Elliot is here.
How y'all doing?
So, anyway, Randy, let's talk about comic books.
Yeah.
Randy's Comic Book Corner.
Hey, let's make that a show.
I want to do something a little strange here and start off backwards, because this is a highly suspect review. It's going to be a spoiler review, because you can't really talk about the show without talking about it in its entirety.
Yes.
But I want everybody to give their review, their number rating they give for this first.
That's a good idea.
To start with, and then we'll work backwards from there. So, you know, the out of 10 arbitrary review system. Harris, why don't you start?
Okay, I'm going to start off, and would you kindly listen? And no one else gets
just
that.
The number. Just
only if you command me to listen.
I'm going to. I'm going
listen,
to,
sir.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 8 dodgy support groups out of 10, just because on the whole it's really strong. I like 99% of the characters, but honestly, episode 10 brings it really down for me, just because it turns from Jessica Jones into Beauty and the Beast with Gaston rallying the villagers to go take on the beast.
About.
I really enjoyed this. I'm going to give it an unabashed 10 crushed purple velvet suits out of 10.
Randy?
I'm going to give it 8 uncomfortable watching Doctor Who ever again.
At least the Tenet years. Herman?
You know, I think this is it's a great show. I don't think it's as good as Daredevil, but I think Jessica Jones, or Kristen Ritter plays Jessica Jones, is fantastic. David Tennant is outstanding. Probably right now I give it 8.5 out of 10.
This arbitrary
thing. I was going to say, I was going to make a reference to like the purple suit that
bullshit.
David Tennant was wearing. Yes,
was
I was.
Me.
I was thinking it. So I'll just say 8 out of 10 crumpled purple ties.
Sarah?
I think that the message behind this and the feminist nature of it is great. I think it was far too long. It would have done much better as a 6-8 episode series. So my rating is going to be a little bit lower than I would have liked. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 unwanted male gazes.
Elliot, tread carefully.
I definitely agree that I don't think it is as good as Daredevil, but that's like saying that silver is not as good as gold.
Sure.
I get
why?
Oh, just
because he's black and gold looks better on him.
Rose gold, baby.
Because it's 10 silver pieces to a gold piece. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, but it's 2 electrum.
I give this 7 broken law licenses out of 10.
Well, I myself actually, whereas I think that Daredevil is certainly the more, I mean, it achieves everything it wants to. Perfectly. It's a straight ahead superhero show with one of the strongest villains the Marvel Universe has yet created in cinematic form. Right. However, this to me superseded it for the simple reason that it actually had something to say and said it pretty well. I enjoyed the whole thing, including like even feeling a little irritated by some characters along the way, and then later on going, oh, that's why they're there. I loved this. I thought it was kind of a masterpiece for Marvel, and is in fact the best villain they have in their universe. Thank you very much, David Tennant.
I give it a
sure,
David Tennant.
I always suspected that you were David Tennant.
Scottish accent? Sorry.
10 out of 10 screws demanded sonically.
Sorry.
Say that again.
Kilgrave would probably be in it.
Talk about mind rape.
I mean, obviously, we all have a little bit of a different take on this one. I think we can. Do we all agree that their casting Kristen Ritter was dead on?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was kind of surprised by when I first saw that they cast Kristen Ritter because I'm used to seeing her in Veronica Mars, and I haven't seen Don't Trust the Bee in the Apartment, whatever.
Breaking Bad.
No one has.
Yeah, but, like, I've seen her in person. She's a stick. And I mean, you could breathe hard and break her in half.
Yeah.
And before this was over with, you believe she is the toughest, most dangerous motherfucker in the Marvel Universe, if only because her liver could probably slap you.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing with Kristen Ritter, is that when they cast her, I thought, I love this actress, and I'd seen her in Breaking Bad, so I knew she could do comedy and drama, but she was skinny, and Jessica Jones is many things, but in the comics, she is not a skinny chick.
No.
Not.
But no. She totally brought the physicality to it.
I mean, even kicked Luke Cage's ass.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what this character needed was a world weariness, and boy, she has that in spades. So I think that's what ended up translating above all else.
If anything, that world weariness is what sort of, to me, brought me down to a 7. Among a few of the factors is, like, she's so good at displaying that world weariness and that everything's shit, that there were points in the middle of the series where they were sort of, going through plot lines, not really progressing to Kilgrave. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I don't want to watch this. This is depressing as shit.
It's funny, because that's one of the things that does upgrade it to a 10 for me, because there's something so much more noble about somebody who does the right thing, even though they have every reason not to.
No, but there's the point where she's holding Hogarth's... about to be ex-wife over the subway tracks, and she's giving that soliloquy about, do you know what real shame is? And I'm just like, oh my god, this is so heavy, because she does such a great job that I had to turn it off. Like, I couldn't...
Really?
I right after, I was like, man, I need to go watch, like, something cheery for a second, because this is depressing the fuck out of me.
So, Elliot, am I to understand you've never held anyone over subway tracks?
No.
You really should. It's
not that you're
today's the day!
I don't think he...
That's how I met Randy.
Oh, I have... Oh, I have an idea of who. So.
I don't think he was in a fraternity.
Just remember, lift with your knees and don't hyperextend your arms.
Yeah.
Just on the point of her being very world-weary and skinny and an alcoholic, I think that this is probably the one of the best things about the show, is that they put so many things in it that are slight hints to trauma and PTSD everything that has to do with the after effects of abuse and rape. The fact that she is very skinny and she's very pale, and I don't think she eats a single bite of food.
She has a liquid diet.
She has a liquid diet, which she says.
Don Draper diet.
Is a very typical reaction to someone who's been raped. That you don't, like, it's not like a Lifetime original movie where you're sobbing in the shower all the time.
And it's not a Cameron Crowe monologue, montage with indie songs that gets you through it. And you're fine by the end of it.
No. No, it's not. It's also not Twilight. It's little things that people use to cope, and a lot of people don't even realize that they're doing those things to cope with it. And I think her character sort of realized, but was mostly in denial about, like, why she was drinking so much. And they didn't even, like, mention that she never eats. But it's obvious she never eats because she was traumatized. I'm sorry, one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
And Kilgrave would make her eat. Mm-hmm. Did you notice? Like, in a lot of this.
Yeah. So you're right.
He took her to that restaurant when they were on the scene at the balcony. They were, like, having brunch or something like that. So she could very well associate food with his control.
In fact, I think the only time she eats is when she's having breakfast with him at her childhood home.
She has dinner with Luke.
It's such a...
But that's a safe Safe.
And Luke definitely, in some ways, is the guy.
He's a normalizing agent.
Yeah, normal. He's not. He is not the shining knight in armor either, which is what's important.
I think. And I think an important point about this is you know from episode one, this is a story about a survivor. But as you go through the course of the whole thing, everybody in this, including the fucking villain, is a survivor. Everybody's gone through some pretty fucked up trauma.
Yeah. And can we talk about Kilgrave for a second? Like, just as Tennant was playing him? Because it is so amazingly obvious that... I was joking about this at first, and then the more he would come on the screen and go, well... And I was like, he's playing the Doctor.
Yes. Yeah.
Except he's playing him as the Master.
Yeah. No, you're right. What I think is... You know, I thought you were going to bring up here is the way in which they have Kilgrave and his conversations with her. I mean, it doesn't just turn into a bunch of punch ups. Their confrontations are often conversations in which he exhibits all the signs of people of that male attitude. It's like, what? That's not rape.
Yeah.
So far as going like, when she goes, you raped me. And he goes, I hate that word.
But I did it in a 4-star hotel, so that's not rape.
Yeah. Would you like to read this transcript with me here, real quick?
Okay.
So you want to be Kilgrave or Jessica?
I can try to do a really bad Scottish accent.
Okay.
He was English in this.
Yes. We used to do a lot more than touch hands.
Yeah, it's called rape.
What? What part of staying at 5-star hotels, eating at the best places, doing whatever the hell you wanted is rape?
The part where I didn't want to do any of it. Not only did you physically rape me, but you violated every cell in my body and every thought in my goddamn head.
That is not what I was trying to do!
It doesn't matter what you were trying to do. You raped me again and again and again.
How was I supposed to know? I never know if someone's doing what they want or what I tell them to.
Oh, poor. Or you.
You have no idea, do you? I have to painstakingly choose every word I say. I once told a man to go screw himself. Can you even imagine?
No, here's the thing.
It's like Kristen Ritter was in the room with us just now.
He is painting himself as such a victim, even in the midst of this rape scenario, which is not uncommon in the situations where rape is called, out.
The most telling thing in that exchange is, that's not what I was trying to do.
Who cares?
And you know, in the last episode, I think it's either the second last or the last, he's on a balcony and he talks about he lets the ghost go of the real thing he wants. Because throughout the series he's like, no, I want her love. I want her to realize how much how good I am for her. But at the very end, when he gets really desperate, he reveals he doesn't want love, he wants control.
Yeah.
Yep. He wants to be able to dictate terms.
But to do it where that's what she actually wants and not what his power is letting him do. I mean, ultimately, his character's actual curse is that he can't discern between the two himself anymore, anyway. And he has no way to genuinely connect with people.
Well, and that's the big twist in this. And great big spoiler here.
Yeah.
Is that towards the end of the series, Jessica figures out he can't control me anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. We talk about how he wants to control her and he wants to know whether it's her choice or not. That's not... He's been forced into it because he knows he can't control her anymore. So the only way he can get her back under his control is to have her doing willingly. And so that's... If he could just go in and do it the easy way again for all his bullshit about I didn't know what I'm doing, he would have done it in a heartbeat. He was forced into it.
Like the very last scene before she kills him, like, he is rejoicing because he thinks he has it.
Yeah.
He thinks he has her.
Well, I remember,
and he's like, I am going to just rule you now.
In the first episode, I even remember going, like, because he's like, Jessica, get back here, and she's walking away.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait a minute, there's a little cognitive dissonance.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, part of what makes it interesting is because we also have a foil to what Kilgrave would be like without his powers in Jerry Hogarth.
Yeah.
She is every bit as toxic, controlling, and gaslighting as Kilgrave is.
Yeah.
She just doesn't have the psychic whammy to back it up.
She wants it.
Oh, yeah. She wants it in the worst damn way. But you watch her with her soon-to-be ex-wife, with her girlfriend, even with Jessica and with Hope, Kilgrave's first victim that we encounter besides Jessica. She is constantly telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. She's telling them, oh, don't worry about this. I have this under control. You're being irrational, would you calm down? She is everything that Kilgrave would be if he didn't have the whammy, and it's kind of disturbing to realize they don't need their powers to have this effect on people.
But see, that's the great thing about Marvel, in that they were as far as I know, they were the first comic book line to really go into that, in that it's less important what your power is as a character, is what your personality is as a character, mm-hmm. because that's going to inform how you use that power. So, I mean, if Kilgrave hadn't had that original trauma, if he wasn't a dick, he could have done something great.
I don't know if he... I honestly don't know with his power whether or not he could have been good.
I'm saying, yeah. if he had an Uncle Ben who caught him using that power... Uncle Ben would have probably sat him down.
Slap the shit out of him.
Except this is a time where if he just said, stop doing that, Uncle Ben would have shut up mid-monologue.
But here's the interesting thing about his power that I don't think we haven't mentioned, is that he can't really control it. Like, when he says, can you pick that up, like, even if it's, like, an innocent thing, like, people are compelled to pick that up no matter what. It's not like his, like...
He can't convince
people. He has to phrase everything.
He has to be very careful. But certainly a big point that the series makes is that he got these powers as a child. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, that he's got that child's need for power.
He's stunted sexually.
Terrifyingly enough, he can do it. And it's just like the Twilight Zone episode with the kid wishing everyone would.
I thought that, like, honestly, the moment that punched me the hardest in the stomach in this whole series, though, was when Jessica, who has every reason to just do everything she can to just kill this guy, has that moment where she realizes... with great power comes great responsibility, and mm-hmm. I actually have a degree of control over the controller now. Mm-hmm. Is it the worst thing anyone has ever done if I don't try and make him use this for good? I found that incredibly, like, I had to pause it and just go, Jesus Christ, what would you do?
See, I thought that was a dip in the show, because I felt like Kilgrave was beyond help.
Yeah.
He was pure evil, and I thought Jessica would have known better. Her of anyone else should have known that he was beyond help.
Well, that's the thing that makes it kind of amazing, especially in I think that was episode, what, 7?
Something like that.
Yeah, which is the moment where I heard half of Tumblr start up with their little alternate universe headcanons about how, oh, he's not so bad after all. He just needs the love of a good woman.
I can fix him.
The point isn't that he could change and become that person. The point is that despite all her darkness, she's still got this nobility to the point that she has to address this question.
And he, as far as she is concerned, he has made a murderer out of her already. Not the way that made her feel.
But so, at the same time...
I think she's fighting against that to a great extent.
I think at the same time, she's having the same conflicted feelings that a lot of people have when confronting their abusers. And, wanting to believe that, hey, maybe there was something different that I could have done that would have fixed all of this. Maybe mm-hmm. there was something I could have done. Maybe this was all my fault after all. And then she goes out and tests this theory and finds out, nope, dude's a sociopath. Yeah. And the only thing he needs is to have his neck snapped.
Agreed. You say sociopath. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just said agreed.
Oh.
I concur.
You say sociopath, and, like, there's a difference between, like, telling everybody what to do, and that sucks. That's horrible in and of itself, but the mm-hmm. way he did it betrayed just how horrible he was. It's like, you know, I'm pissed at Jessica, so you need to keep your eyes open until she gets back.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just because, fuck it, I think it's funny.
Poor
yeah.
Woodhouse.
Right. Yeah, he has no empathy. He has no concept of what it feels like to suffer, to be at someone else. While I think Jessica is the opposite, and she has too much empathy.
And she shuts off sometimes.
And she shuts off, or tries to shut off, to the point where it's too... difficult for her to go to that support group, because she knows how those people feel, and she feels it just as much as they do. So I thought that was really interesting how they put these two, like, different neuroses on two different characters. That's...
Interesting side note here, when they were first developing the show, Patsy Walker, who, of course, if you read comics, you know, eventually becomes Hellcat, was originally going to be Carol Danvers.
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Because in the comics, that's who it is.
Yeah, and they were developing in that way, and even casting, until Marvel said, we're going to give her a movie. So.
I'm glad they went that way, because honestly, in the comics, Carol works perfectly.
in this show,
it's not
Carol would have been a bad fit.
And Trish really liked that idea of her being a former child star, and she's bringing in Rebecca DeMornay as this very controlling stage mom, and having, you know, one of the first things that Jessica does after she gets her powers is she rescues somebody from being controlled.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, that's a major thing. And you couldn't really have that. I don't think that would have worked as well with Carol. Or at
totally
least it
agree.
Would have gone against her character set.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we've been talking a lot about Jessica Jones, Kilgrave, but can we talk about the Night Therapist? That's what I call him. I think the guy with the fro that needs to be cut down a little
Malcolm.
Like, he's a great character, and they play with your perceptions.
Oh yeah,
you're like, oh, he's just a crackhead.
Yeah,
it's like
he's comic relief. You think he's like the comic relief?
Yeah, and it's so obvious, like on second thought, that of course he's controlled by Kilgrave.
Yeah,
that you feel like you've been commanded a little bit.
Yeah,
and they even hint at it from the brother of the crazy. I forgot his name. Ruben, maybe.
Yeah.
The terrible characters in the show. Yes.
Oh.
Like they even go, you know, we're all a little racist sometimes because your perceptions, and like it's really easy when you're watching the show as well. It's a black crackhead. It's like, he's not Kilgrave.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about Ruben and his sister. I'm forgetting his sister's name. Whereas I agree, Ruben is there
Lannister.
Mainly just to be a tragic victim.
Yeah.
Like, I don't agree with that about her sister, but I think her sister figures there in a way that has more to do with what we're talking about in the subtext. That she is that, on the surface, visibly emotionally disturbed woman that the show wants to say, don't forget these people have souls too.
But I don't think that comes in until the end of the show.
But that's kind of
too late. It's too late by the time it comes. She is such a cartoon, and I don't know if it's the actress or the writing or both, that by the time they start humanizing her at all, she's been a plot device three or four times already, and I don't care.
Well,
basically, that's a good point.
I will say that you know, despite my glowing number that I've given this, and I still stick by it because I enjoyed the fuck out of this, but one of the great things it does in the first three episodes is it sets up a very, very cool noir tone.
Yeah.
And then that kind of falls by the wayside as they go, and I think one of the weaknesses of this is they're so married to the you know, what was the purple storyline from Alias, which is great. It's the best, you know, it's the heart of Alias.
Even
totally
Randy
is.
Admits that Bendis wrote a good run of
this is before I turned on Bendis.
Yeah. Okay.
I love it. But they're so married to this is the storyline that we're going to do, just like Daredevil is like, no, we're going to do the Kingpin versus Daredevil in Hell's Kitchen, that... You know, I would have loved to have seen Jessica, like, solving some other cases here and there
as opposed to
just doing this. And I would have loved seeing her get a couple of successes
that
in
is,
there because
well,
it can be a little... She does have a few, but it's a very, very relentless thing to the point where there are almost points that I'm just like... Because she comes up with some really bad ideas.
Yes.
And that aids the plot, but I want to see Jessica being smart, and I want to see her succeed.
That is my central issue with the show, is that Alias the comic, Purple was the last story, and her it had informed her, but we didn't find out about the Purple Man stuff until three story arcs in. And they started up, I thought this was going to be a blend of, you know, noir, PI, and superheroes, which is pretty much like they made a show just for me. That's what it looked like at the start. And then, slowly but surely, it's all Kilgrave. And the problem is, Kilgrave isn't sustainable for 13 episodes, and that's why it feels long. Yeah. That's why there's a lot of... Toward the end, there's a lot of, why didn't she just kill him already?
Yes.
Why does this... Mm-hmm. Why would anyone do this? Why would Jerry risk what she did? Why would Crazy Sister let work all the people up? There's a lot of things that happen. It's because, oh, we can't do the big confrontation yet, and it's very obvious in the writing.
Yeah.
But every time it started to drag like that for me, I got a scene like the scene in the police station. And I'm like, okay, I'm in.
But, you know, you want to talk about this, though. The one thing, something that wasn't Kilgrave, the lady that hires her and ends up trying to kill her because her mother died in the Battle of New York and Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, episode that was just to reference the Avengers and everything
but,
else.
You say that as a bad thing, though.
Yeah, I think that's a bad thing.
No, but to me, that retroactively, like, one thing I like about the Marvel Universe is their media keeps on making, retroactively to me, makes things better in the past. Because they gave Avengers, which my big problem with that movie was that things didn't have emotional weight. it was like cartoon characters, but oh my, sure. real people.
That's what Iron Man 3 was for.
Yeah, that did that too, though. Real people or like, Daredevil died here.
Yeah,
and
actually,
we have to deal with that.
I like that aspect as well. I think that event was so formative to the entirety of the Marvel Universe. That's why they keep bringing it up, because it was like the
world. It was their 9/11.
It was their 9/11. Okay. Yeah. It was the world first realizing, fuck, not only not alone in the universe, but the rest of the universe wants to kill us.
Yeah, now, my only gripe with that, and this is going to be specific to me, maybe Bo will agree with me, but I don't like the dark. I like the notion of the Avengers basically saved New York with very little collateral damage. So hearing, you know, people, innocent people died in the wake of all that, I understand that it's realistic. I feel like the more you go into it, the
Randy's all like, don't you Man of Steel my fucking Avengers.
That's exactly my point. You go too far with it and you get Man of Steel, and then it's just grimdark.
Sure, no, but I see what you're saying, Randy, but like, they're not going to go Man of Steel because the Avengers went out of their way to avoid the entire fucking city getting destroyed.
Sure.
But when you topple entire serpent monsters
people
over
are gonna
a building,
get yeah.
people
yeah.
are going to cry.
Yeah,
and this is their way of having their cake and eating it, too,
and
without
it's
breaking its
neck. Yeah, and that's the thing. Okay. It's like, I went along with it because, yeah, I think that one of the biggest things they did in Daredevil that I like, and they continue it here, is that the reason Hell's Kitchen is a terrible place like it was in 70s New York when they wrote all these comics, and not, you know, Yuppieville, which it really is,
which it actually is now,
meaning it's even more terrible.
It's because it happened in the Avengers,
yeah.
And I like that. But the more you point out, like this person died, it can build up. Now,
you're right.
One or two people, I think it was fine, but I had that knee jerk reaction of I don't know if I like
don't
this.
Don't Man of Steel my
yes, exactly.
The part where she's like, "Don't take your shit out on other people."
Yes,
I was clapping. I literally clapped because I'm like, "Yes, I'm like that's one of my biggest pet peeves just in my life is when people take their personal shit on other people." I'm like,
"Yeah,
thank you for finally fucking saying and clarifying what my issue is with people."
Yeah, but I don't feel like it's a Man of Stealing it because Man of Steel. My problem wasn't that thousands of people died; it was that Superman gave almost no effort to trying
Superman.
To keep people from dying during this fight. The Avengers, half of the fight is them saving innocent people.
Sure.
Of course people still died, but the important thing is the Avengers realized their job is to save people, not just to beat up the other guy.
One thing that might have helped with the length is if they didn't bring Kilgrave as a character in. If he had just been in the background the entire time, because up until we actually see Tenet, he is just this overlooming figure, and you never know where he is. And there was a joke that I made earlier that this movie, that this entire series was Jessica Jones versus Gamergate. And and in a very real way, that's exactly what it was like, because for Jessica, even though she knows that Kilgrave is dead, as far as she can tell, she cannot trust anybody. Because she has seen what he is capable of, and the cat, and we see all the cat's paws he works through, and all the subtle ways that he fucks with her. She can't trust anybody who comes into her life as not being someone who may be part of a long game to fuck with her. And for like a lot of people who've been targeted by, you know, ethics and private investigating, it's really like how they feel now, because they can never be sure like whether someone is trying to run an op on them or something.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can apply this to anything where they've been traumatized or, you know, the object of unwanted attention in any way, negative or positive. But I don't know if I can really draw a connection to Gamergate with that. It's definitely more a universal, you know, violation and rape.
Well, it all started when a girl left a guy who didn't take it well.
Yeah, I mean, Gamergate is an example of...
I forgot how they...
But I take your point. I mean, it's not so specifically Gamergate.
Yeah.
That's just a very recent and pronounced example.
No. The horrible facts of the show can apply to just about anything.
Okay, let me be the 12-year-old in the room.
Yes.
That is my role. And say,
Transformers are great!
For a Netflix Marvel series... And this is embarrassing to say, but it had the most graphic sex scene I think I've ever seen.
Graphic? Do you mean hottest?
I don't mean graphic as in bad. I mean like, no, they fucked.
Yeah,
that wasn't like cinema.
Well, and it's
that
so
like,
great because the reason that it gets like to that level is they're like, Wait, you have superpowers too? Yeah.
Well, let's talk.
You're
now.
Invulnerable?
Okay. Let's talk now about what we haven't barely mentioned at all, which is Mike Coulter's Luke Cage.
Yes.
Who I think really nails it in this. And I'm so glad that the next series is, in fact, his series. I'm like, yeah, let's see more about that guy. He was awesome. And I think that he works so well in here specifically because he is genuinely an equal to Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. He is not a knight in shining armor who comes to save her. In fact, she basically is saving him. even though this incredibly complex relationship, it still is you rooting for it to work between them. And not just because we know in the comic books they end up getting married and having kids and all that.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
I didn't know that.
Chris, you keep using the phrase knight in shining armor, and I keep waiting for you to say white knight so I can correct you.
Well, the thing, it's just a flesh wound, Randy.
But, I mean, that's very interesting that, like, there are two possible men in the series that could have been white knights.
Yeah.
And neither of them are.
And both of them immediately try to take over as soon as they decide that, like, oh, I've got to save her. All right, here's what we're going to do. And Jessica and Patty and Trish are looking at him going, like, the fuck you're talking? Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I want to bring up is that we haven't really talked about the Nuke storyline. Sergeant Simpson, which, by the way, I just think it should not have been in the series.
What? I agree.
It should not have been. Really? Yeah. It served no purpose. He was just there to be the crazy boyfriend.
It's building the arc for Defenders. Like,
Then
it's too long.
It should be in season two. Mm-hmm. It distracted from what the main story should have been, which is about Kilgore.
I still feel like that falls into the bigger subtext of everything, about the boyfriend who clearly has something in him that's kind of abusive, but you believe that, no, he's okay.
Even if he is a dollar store ripoff of Steve Rogers.
That's the point of the
I mean, and there is that touchstone of, like, well, I'm only bad when I have these chemicals in me. And
it's still bad.
I thought, like, in the terms of what the show, which I think is really about, is the subtext, he fits in there perfectly.
That's a reasonable point. I just feel like, I think, I'm with him on this, in that I think they spent too long on it, and it was kind of an unfocused arc. And there's a little bit of creepy overtone to Patsy gets attacked by this guy, and then
she sort of
gets together, and it was a little messed up.
Well, of course it's creepy. It's supposed to be. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, arguably, she has been controlled by Kilgore Reed as well.
Sure.
And so,
I will say, I fucking hate Nuke in the comic books. I fucking hate that character.
Really?
I think he's terrible.
Even in Born Again?
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't like that character.
You're a crazy person.
I'm sorry. I just always was like, this guy is, like you said, a cheap ripoff of Captain America, which is the point. But at the same time, you're just like, oh, stop. We can come up with something better.
The face tattoo's
a bit much.
The face tattoo.
Thank God he
did not tattoo the American flag.
But, talking about Nuke, though, the casting was so perfect because he does look like a dollar ripoff of Chris Evans.
Yeah.
You're like, man, you would not be in Perfect Score.
Yeah.
You are. The understudy.
I didn't even see, because I didn't know Nuke's, like, civilian name, I didn't see that coming right up until he said, give me a red.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, I knew when he said my boys, I'm like, oh, this is Nuke.
I didn't know.
I knew instantly, I've read the comics so many times, so I was like, oh, okay. Yeah,
give me a red was what tipped me off, too. Yeah. I forgot the my boys reference, that's nice.
But that's one of the great things about this series, is they managed to sneak in, and I do mean the word sneak, so many characters in there that I didn't expect to see. I didn't expect to see Hellcat. Or Nuke, like that's awesome to me.
This is a new era for TV and Netflix and for Marvel. And granted, I'm not watching a lot of gory stuff on TV right now, but when that lady blows up herself, holy shit! What the fuck? I was like, you can pan the camera out now.
I want to show you her organs all over the front
line. I was like, more organs!
Yeah. Wasn't gory enough.
Is she going to reanimate?
Although, like, what Kilgrave, he does show with that power, he can do, like, some unintentional good of... He's just like, because she's like, I had a feeling. And Kilgore goes, did you really? She's like, no. Why did you do it? It makes me feel important. Thank you. Because people say that shit all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you didn't have a fucking feeling. You just want to seem important.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it'd be great. You would be funny if each of us for a day could have Kilgrave's powers and see what we would each do with them.
I gotta go.
Oh my god! Like there, I would make Trump drop out of the presidential race.
Are you kidding? I'd make him win the nomination.
Republicans will not win.
Yeah, you know, you're right.
I'm still half convinced that he is going to turn around and go and win it and go, are you people fucking crazy? I have done everything
he,
I
like,
can.
He, like, takes the hair off. Yeah. Like, rip off the rubber mask. I am, oh my god,
they live, they live. I have used quotes positively that Hitler said in his speeches. I have made fun of a crippled guy. What do you want?
Has nobody read DC Comics and Lex Luthor when he ran for president? Come the fuck on, I'm just following the story.
The man for all seasons, he looks exactly like Lex Luthor.
Guys. I think you're insulting all the many listeners who are Trump fans.
All one.
Well, you know, if there is one, he's going to be the one screaming in the comments.
He's going to be this hashtag, not all Trump supporters.
Yes, all Trump supporters.
I'm just saying, no one has seen Trump and Bernie Sanders at the same time.
Whoa. So is it
this is a Mission Impossible thing.
Well, but it might be a Captain Marvel situation. Whenever Bernie says socialism, he goes into Trump.
I can't say my own name.
All right, let's not switch to a political podcast because we can do that all too easily. And I'll go, yay, we're on team anyone who's not Trump. Who?
Jessica Jones versus Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. Next season.
No, just Kilgrave. Tell Trump to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
Which they stole from the Preacher.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
There is one character I was a little disappointed we didn't see, and that's Matt Murdock.
Yeah, I was. No, they right. reference yeah. him yeah. With Rosario Dawson, who yeah. they've said will they'll be the one character that will be in every single one of the yeah. Netflix shows,
why?
Or at least for an episode.
Who's
or two.
This?
Why
Rosario Dawson?
Oh yeah, okay.
Why Daredevil?
Oh why? Why?
Why? What's
why?
What's your beef with Rosario Dawson?
I don't. Well, she's great. What's the Why did she need to be in there? Why would this? Why was this magical coincidence?
Crossover.
Right.
Marvel's Ooh, obsessed with
okay,
that.
Okay, it's all in New York. That's
I mean,
the connection.
You clearly don't like the idea of the no. shared universe of Marvel.
I like it when it's not trying to force feed every single character every movie. That's why I am very concerned about Civil War.
concerned?
Did you
be
see that
awesome?
Trailer?
No, I'm concerned.
It's going to be no wait. If you're
not long enough,
if you're concerned that it's going to be. Anything like the comic series,
I am,
I'm right there with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it's Mark Millar.
Well, I think we're all on that page.
But if you're worried that it's not going to give you feels because Cap betrayed Tony's friendship, then...
That's how sweet.
I'm not worried about
that
at all.
Really never established any of the movies.
It was established.
Oh, I totally felt like it was established.
It was totally established.
Well, they're allies.
No, Tony is an emotionally stunted man-child who thinks camaraderie is friendship. Captain America was the guy that his father, who he always wanted his father's love, looked up to. You don't think he's going to think of that guy as his friend without too much establishment?
I'm just saying there are a lot of dark corners of the internet that you are not checking out. I'm just saying, let us not forget that Tony Stark, his two best friends, one is an employee and the other is a robot he calls Dummy.
Well, he has a scientist friend.
It's like Cap is like, man, we
what
just hang
Rudy?
Out on weekends.
On.
Oh, it's his
and
black
Tony's
friend.
Like,
shut up.
It's gonna be so great when Black Panther comes up. He's gonna be like, I have two black friends.
So anyway, why Rosario Dawson's presence irks us?
Well, you're gonna hate what I have to say. Then I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. should have showed up at one point.
Why?
Like, I think they should.
Yeah, that would.
There is a storyline in that show. Like people, superpower people show up. They clearly are not fazed by that. There should have been some kind of, like, even if not the characters show up, some kind of reporting, like, hey, we have another one.
Well apparently they can't say the names of any of the other heroes, because they only ever refer to the big green guy.
See, that's a problem I have. Just call him the Hulk. Call him Captain America.
But I think that's them being cute. I think that's them, like, real people don't call him the Hulk.
So this is like Doctor Who, where they're just wink, wink, nudge, nudging, and, like, making references to... Past
well,
work.
But the nice thing about that is that you realize that at any point...
Like, K-9's gonna show up!
It doesn't count unless you say it out loud.
Well, the nice thing about that is that you realize, because, like, at any point in the future of these series, those characters could very well show up.
Yeah, but they're not going to.
No, that's not true.
I think Tony Stark
that's what the Defenders
gonna
is gonna be. Is the
and what?
Yeah, the money! Who's gonna pay Robert Downey Jr.'s salary.
Yeah, his $50 million.
Well, yeah.
Let me point out,
they're making a lot of money.
There is something of a S.H.I.E.L.D. crossover here, because the company that they refer to at the end is IGH. And that stands for Inhuman Growth Hormone. I promise you.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because in the comics, it's meant to growth hormone.
So is it saying that maybe the
that's
stuff
so
he was...
cheap.
Is it saying the stuff he was treated with, perhaps, yes. was that?
That's where he gets his powers. That's where Jessica gets her powers.
That's where I get my powers.
What powers?
It also explains my gills.
Well, you get your powers from
that's
whiskey.
Just so you can get more whiskey in. Yeah, you just pour them in the gills at the same time.
Your liver puffs up like Popeye's arms.
Ow. You keep stabbing me.
No, I mean, I would not want Rosario Dawson to show up in, like, series outside of these Netflix series, mm-hmm. because she is a character that always really regularly shows up in any Hell's Kitchen stories. Yeah. Like, she is regularly in the comics being like, okay, she's the person that heroes go to when they get beat up and they can't go to the hospital.
Except they've said that she's not the Night Nurse.
Yeah, but she is.
She's going towards that.
We'll see.
Yeah, and the Hulk's not the big green guy.
He's doing the exact same purpose.
And Thor's got a big hard hammer.
And the guy who looks like an otter, Cumberbatch, he wasn't calm.
Salamander.
Now, what I'll say is that I agree with Sarah. Well, I'm all about shared universe. I like the notion. But I do think that Claire Temple came in so late, and she's in episode like 12.
Yeah, she's like in the last episode.
That it's too late. 12, you needed to have done that way earlier in the series if you're going to do that little nod.
I think they consciously don't bring her in until late, because if you bring her in early, you have to bring Daredevil.
You bring Daredevil.
Yeah.
And they even bring that up in the last episode. Like, oh, I know this guy.
Yeah, she's like, oh no, I know about people with weird things going on. Wink.
What the fuck? Where did you get that?
She likes. Okay, all right. Yeah. You know what? They maybe it's in there, and I just missed it. But they should have had like more like Daredevil drops throughout the series, like little things like Daredevil drop, like a newspaper heading or
this
somebody.
Scat is clearly a superhero.
I mean, and sometimes it feels like you're fucked if you do and you're fucked if you don't, because you can have something like the Last Avengers movie, which is basically a huge setup for phase two,
or like she should walk by Foggy.
Don't have anything until the end.
Yeah, walking by Foggy would have been cool. Just like. Don't have him say a word of dialogue. Yeah. He's just going about his day.
Hey, but who's going to pay the salary for that? I'm just kidding.
I will say, and you know, this is they're like, they don't know if this series was going to be a success, so they might be holding their cards a little close to their chest.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, I think it would have been cool if there were a couple of like standalone or at least more like Jessica does something other than obsess over Kilgrave episodes. And, you know, hey, private investigators sometimes talk to lawyers. And it would have been cool to see Foggy come in, or even Matt.
That's why I thought they were going to come in.
That's why they
You were wrong.
That's why they
and you were wrong to think so.
They could only get Rosario Dawson.
The only reason, I didn't have any disappointment is because I have to do the movie news every week, and I realized that would have been announced already.
I'm just saying that, you know, Rosario Dawson they could get for at least 25% less than Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the thing is, Matt, in the comments, Matt Murdock is the guy who hires her. Matt Murdock is the lawyer she works with.
Yeah.
Daredevil and Alias were sister books when Ben is working on them.
Yeah.
And they have Jerry Hogarth for that role, so they don't need Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the bummer, is that I didn't think Jerry Hogarth was as interesting a character as Matt Murdock would have been.
Wait, Randy, you're right, because like they do need Jerry, because if you bring Matt Murdock in, you can't not have him be Daredevil.
No, he's got the powers.
At what point does Daredevil overshadow Jessica Jones?
That's a reasonable point, and I think that's probably why they did it.
And but also, with his enhanced senses, he's going to be super vulnerable to Kilgrave anyway.
Well, Kilgrave is his villain. Yeah. Purple Man was his villain
originally.
Well, you guys have convinced me I hate this series.
You're welcome.
One minor little point that I...
Thank you, Killjoys.
The opening, like, the animated
opening. Oh, yeah. So good.
The theme song.
Yeah.
Great. Man, I loved all the music throughout this thing. I looked on Spotify. I looked online to see if it was available anywhere. It's the guy who did the music for 24.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
He did the...
Yeah, Sean Callery.
I could have done that.
thanks, Jane Carpenter.
So, did anyone else catch the wink and nod toward some of Bendis' indie comics?
No.
The climax of the series takes place at the slip of a yacht called the Goldfish.
Right.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah, yeah.
And what's that reference?
It's a reference to his the comics that made Bendis get known, aka Goldfish and Jinx.
Okay.
Is that a good comic?
They're really good. Yeah. It's really early on.
Yeah,
so
I like him. I like Jinx better than Goldfish.
I like Jinx better than Goldfish, but it's right before he does Torso, and Torso is when he really solidified a lot of his... Bendis?
Yeah.
The fuck you say, Bendis?
Yeah.
The entire page is just panels.
Right.
Yep. Exactly. Talking.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just looking here. I didn't realize this. In the opening credits, you can see Avengers Tower.
Oh, I didn't notice that either.
Yeah, that's there.
Well, damn, that's what I was going to say.
Shit. Well, that was great, Elliot. Forget. Thanks for your input.
Here's another Easter egg. Avengers Tower was played by Rosario Dawson.
Oh, I remember. Like, if you're going to have a Luke Cage villain, and I'm not kidding here, can we get like Matt Smith playing some big villain? Like, I want to ruin all of Doctor Who fans.
No, they're going to get Tom
for
Baker.
Everybody. Yes, get Tom Baker if he doesn't look like a melted candle.
He's going to be Black Widow.
Jessica Jones, season 7. I want her beating the dog shit out of William Hartnell. Take that, old man.
Yeah, here's the thing that's going to fuck you up forever once you realize that the Doctor is also Kilgrave. Come along, Pond.
Oh, my God. Oh, no!
That's great!
No. Oh, so he was telling those people not to blink.
Yeah.
Don't
because
blink.
The statues. Guys, he was saving them. Uh-huh. We're all wrong about him.
Oh, my God. There is a master cut to make up this show to mix it in with Doctor Who, where it turns out the whole time he was the hero.
This is while he was Time Lord Victorious.
No, he has a chameleon circuit. He's just like, I am playing this character of Kilgrave. And he's just going to regenerate into Matt Smith, so Kilgrave is not dead.
See, like, one of my biggest pet peeves of like, you know, film geeks online in general right now is like, well, if you look at the film this way, this horrible psychotic is actually the fucking hero. It's like, that's not how narrative fucking works, you assholes.
But I tell you, like, at the end of the series, they really cut that off. I think they saw that coming, mm-hmm. and they said, like, we're going to have him give a speech where he just, in his own words, is like,
I am actually the villain.
I am actually the villain, because, like, they knew Tumblr would get there and be like, no, he's so bad.
Yeah.
He's a precious little snowflake.
Despite his taste for a little bit of rape.
All the fix that are going on right now where Jessica redeems him and they can go off and have adventures with Draco Malfoy, who's also...
Hey, totally misunderstood. Yeah.
Like, yeah. He's fucked by, like, he had a horrible childhood with horrible parents.
So did Kilgrave.
So did Ted Bundy.
But no.
Fuck that.
To my knowledge.
Yeah, what do you think the Periodis curse was for?
Oh, right, but, they're suggesting here online that the red-haired crazy girl is going to turn into Typhoid Mary.
Yeah. That was,
oh, God, no.
Yeah, that's a little bit too far.
No.
But I think this series is really important. I think that the whole point of him not turning out to be, like, a good... Is there an echo? What the hell?
It's just in your head, Sarah.
Oh, I was like, am I controlling all of your minds?
Yes, Sarah.
Now get me some cake. That's all I would do. I'd be like, bring me food and drive me everywhere.
You would be like that, the monster from Spirited Away. I want all the food.
Yep. I'd be no face.
In local news, an Austin bakery was eviscerated.
I'm a monster.
But a bunch of coins.
Must take cake.
I think the fact that he doesn't redeem himself, and in fact, it probably comes out worse than he is at the beginning,
yes.
is great. And that we need series like that because there are so many, as a woman, just like all the things that women are told to romanticize, mm-hmm. from like Beauty and the Beast
to Twilight to Buffy.
Got
Spike and Buffy,
forgiving men who abuse and rape you when they do something good. I think the fact that the series showed that they showed him like doing good for like 2 seconds and her being like, no, fuck him, he's still evil.
Yeah.
That's important. And I think this show is a big trigger warning for anyone.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, for anyone who's been abused in any kind of way, even like addiction and things like that.
But it might very well be the type of show where you're like, okay, yeah, trigger warning, but it also might be helpful.
Yeah, exactly. And the support group that they have in there, I think, was really important that they showed that, because they were... when they were initially interviewing those people who said they had been controlled by Kilgrave, and they were figuring out the people who actually had been controlled. The one woman who was like, oh, it was nothing. He just, like, told me to smile.
Yeah.
And, like, that, it almost felt like they pulled someone off the street.
Yeah.
And were like, okay, tell us an experience with a man that you felt uncomfortable about.
Just smile, honey.
Well, that was very deliberately chosen. You know that because...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a female showrunner on this show, and it shows. It's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's things that, no matter how... in touch with feminism you are as a male writer, no man is going to come up with the way this show...
Hey, Randy, you should smile more. Randy smiles all the time.
Like, I had somebody tell me that the other day, just like somebody at work, oh, why are you in a bad mood? You should smile. And I was just pissed off. I'm like, what the fuck are you going to tell me to smile? I'm like, oh.
Maybe I've smiled 390 days in a row and I'm ready to have a frowny day.
Yeah.
You douchebag.
Every woman I know has had that experience many times.
There's a reason why we have the expression natural resting bitch face and not the opposite for men. It's because women are expected to smile.
No. To be fair, I was referred to Bo as having natural resting bitch face.
Natural bitch.
That's bastard face, you prick. I have a beard.
Yeah, what's his name?
Harris O'Malley.
Gay jokes.
I'm sorry, Sarah. I cut you off.
Gay jokes are so good for this discussion. But the whole smile, baby.
Yeah.
Or Jessica, smile. Or Jessica, I could never get her to wear those dresses.
Yeah.
And making her pretty when it wasn't her, and that I just. It hit home so hard for me, and I think it will for a lot of women. I think even women who aren't interested in comics, like, I mean, I don't really know anything about the source material, like, at all. I had never heard of Jessica Jones, I'll be honest. Just watching this as a feminist piece, as a feminist anti-hero piece... was really important, and I think that you all should share this with your girlfriends and mothers and sisters.
Well, my 12-year-old daughter was watching it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I had to stop her.
Oh, okay.
She's 12.
Yeah.
She's too mature.
Yeah,
why,
too...
is Jessica rolling over? You don't need to see this.
Yeah, she's like, I don't understand.
Yeah, she was. My wife was in the room, and she had. I saw Kristen Ritter on the TV, and I'm like, what are you watching? She said, Jessica Jones. Like, no.
It better be the bitch in apartment 23.
What is that black man doing to her against the wall? Nothing. You'll find out when you're older. Never. I think what you're to your point, Sarah, mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I think it works so well because there is no point, despite the subtext almost being the text of this, mm-hmm. there's no point where they feel the need to speechify about it.
Yep.
To go, here's our list of all the things we're thinking to put it up on the surface and tell you flat out, and this, and this, and this. They don't need to. Everything in the show is very clear if you live in the world today, mm-hmm. what were the concerns of what we're talking about, the problems that exist, they're just couched through this superhero vision. And it's just, it makes it somehow even more relatable for mm-hmm. people who may not have otherwise really thought about some of these things.
Yep.
Things that what makes it so valuable. There's going to be a whole group of people who are going to be watching this and thinking about it. And suddenly these things they've been hearing might make a bit more sense.
Well, yeah. To bring it to the geek side just a little bit real quick. If I had one lasting complaint is I don't think they really shot a lot of the superhero scenes for Jessica that well.
The fight scenes are sloppy.
Yeah, the fight scenes are not.
But I thought
good.
The fight scene in the bar was great.
First
fight scene.
No,
where they're both discovering their other powers and they're holding back.
Yeah, I like that.
It was shot for comedy essentially, and I thought that was great.
I love that like Luke is just literally flipping his hand.
Yeah,
just, before the gif of his eye roll is just everything.
Not so much Luke, but Jessica. Like they don't. I don't get a sense of her power, like her power set. Like she
It's confusing.
It's a little confusing.
I think they do that on purpose.
Yeah, I think it's deliberate.
And that's fine, but
I feel that way about her in the comics. I still don't know what the extent of her powers is.
Can't she fly? It's like, no,
she can, just not very well.
Yeah. She's so strong that she can use her leg muscles to leap very high.
She's like the original Superman, and the idea that she can't fly, she can just jump so high and land with ease from high.
Although in the comics, she can fly.
She's very bad at it.
But there's like some scenes where...
She has laser eyes, too.
It's like when she...
Wait, everybody has laser eyes, don't they?
But it's like there's something like in episode, I think, 8 it is, when she kidnaps Kilgrave and she's going to put him in the cell. Like, she jumps and, like, she, I don't know, jumps, like, I don't know, like a mile or something like that.
Yeah.
But then at the last episode, she jumps over, like, a balcony and she tumbles and, like, falls.
Yeah, they're inconsistent. Like, what's going on? They're inconsistent with her powers, and that is down to the writing. That is down to, we can't get her. She can't catch Kilgrave, or you know, we have to have security guys who can take her on, even though she's super strong. Mm-hmm.
And comic book movies have always had a problem with that shit. True,
I agree that I think the biggest problem. I have two problems with the series at all. Neither one of them keep it from being a 10 for me. Yeah. One is what you just said. There are multiple cases where you're like, well, we've already seen her do this. Why doesn't she just do this?
Yeah.
It's rampant in superhero entertainment, it's this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And obviously a big pain in the ass for writers.
Yep.
It reminds me of like Kirkman when he was talking about cutting off Rick's hand in the comics and then going, what the fuck did I do? Because it made the writing 1,000 times harder. And yet he, of course, at that point, you have to do it. You can't have one panel suddenly has another hand. I gotta jack off Edward.
Rick found a hand.
Well, I mean, this is a shield. He just gets a robot hand.
But this is why you see comic writers fighting with fans on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's for stuff like this. Because the writers are doing their best to keep up with all these crazy powers. Mm-hmm. And the fans only notice the inconsistencies because they're reading. They're focusing laser-focused on the book.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about the other writing stuff.
Sure.
So basically all they're hearing is, well, you got this wrong and this wrong. And that may be accurate, but that's not what the writer wants to hear when they're juggling 12 balls in the air.
That's how Dan Slott happens.
Not that I'm defending Dan Slott on Twitter. I want to be very clear
about
that.
My other problem is that there's 3 LGBT characters on the show, 3 lesbian characters. 2 are barely given personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that is like a heartless, cruel bitch.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe you should have come up with or like developed one of the other characters to be more interesting or
She got basic instinct.
I think was interesting though is that I don't think she got basic instinct. I think she got masculine. She was a male character played by a female character, and you don't really see a female character being allowed to be as asshole-y as a man is.
Yeah.
Without it being like a major port, like people calling her out as a bitch.
Yeah, I kind of liked that Jerry was allowed to be sort of selfish and, you know, kind of a hateful character in a lot of ways.
I don't have a problem with her being a woman. I have a problem with that they made her a lesbian.
Yeah.
Because then you get into the whole, oh, well, that's that whole butch lesbian thing.
Oh, I didn't ever pick up on that. That was part of a lesbian.
I didn't think that was that important to the plot, that her being a lesbian was just a characteristic, like her having dark hair or something.
Yeah,
that
could easily have been a husband and
ability
and a
to go into bullet time.
And the thing, like, you know, that character, if she's like the top New York attorney, you have to be that big of an asshole.
Yeah.
She survives as a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
You make a choice. Like, are you going to just give that part of your personality up? Because she's probably, over the years, has had to make compromise that has always come back great for her.
No, once again, I have no problem with the character being that. My problem is just with the small amount of representations of lesbians on television.
Yeah.
This, you choose to make this character a lesbian when there's no real reason to do that?
But you have a good point, because like, it's like the character...
But yeah, where do you draw the line? Yeah. I mean, so all LGBT characters have to be perfect angels?
No,
I don't,
but we are still in the world where there's such a limited amount of well-explored lesbians on television. Maybe we should, especially in a superhero universe, maybe we should try not to go and make her such a terrible person.
On a similar tip, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, go ahead.
It's another case of, like, well, the best victims are the skinny white girls who eventually triumph, and that's something I've seen repeated a number of places as well, with some accuracy, that, like, it would be nice if there was a little more diversity amongst the mm-hmm. female heroes, who, until Claire Temple shows up at the end, are Lily White, and the only other times we see women of color with lines, we see the comically butch lesbian in the prison, and then we also get like one of the victims.
Yeah,
and that's really it.
And a plus woman. And a postwoman.
Nobody remembers the damn postwoman.
And the housekeeper.
She'll be a recurring character.
Of course. Yeah, but I mean, Chris, I guess I agree with you now, because like Netflix and their track record with lesbians, as much as people love Orange is the New Black, they
which won't even bring itself to say the word bisexual.
Yeah, the LGBT people on that show are criminals and rapists as well. So lesbians are not portrayed very well on TV in general. Would have been nice to see a more positive lesbian character,
especially when we're talking about like a whole world that some people are, quite frankly, that's all they're watching.
It's
superhero shows and the superhero movies that tie in, and to go, let's introduce, we're a gay character, but let's maybe not make them completely self-serving asshole.
If you look at her ex-wife, I mean her soon-to-be ex-wife, the doctor,
who once again is barely explored.
She may be barely explored, but it's pretty well established that she works at a low-income clinic,
and she's relatively complex. Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that they have her go like, "I'm doing this because it's going to hurt you."
Yeah, because just she's been hurt.
I've been hurt, and that's all I know how to do.
It's like you're catching her at her worst time in her life. She's not going to be a shiny good character, but she does, to the extent she can. She wants to punish her, but she doesn't really go and turn into a complete asshole until Hogarth turns into full Hogarth. And she's like, "Now I want 90%, and I'm blackmailing you, and deal with it." And that's when, because that's after Jessica like held over a fucking subway platform. So, I mean, if anything, it's sort of, it's a little bit past where I think we are right now socially, but it shows them as, you know, living, breathing characters who happen to be gay.
Once again, bringing up, I think it is an important point that everybody in this show is fucking damaged.
That's true.
Yeah.
Luke is like the most well-adjusted.
Luke's the most well-adjusted, but he's still dealing with shit.
He's dealing with his dead wife.
Yes. Yeah, but he's still like,
and
you know,
the experiments that were done to him that gave him his powers.
Yeah. Which, on the whole, don't have much of a downside. Except I guess I'll never be a junkie.
Once he gets a concussion and they need to drain his brain fluid and they have to go.
What if he gets that? That
made me go, yeah!
And in the very first episode where you see Luke Cabby and he's, you know, kind of carrying on an affair with a woman, and he's very gentle with her, and for his first assignation with Jessica before he knows he has power, she's like, "I won't break," and he's like, "Yeah, you will."
Yeah.
So there's a drawback.
Yeah,
he
could only date someone who was also superpowered, which, you know,
date the Hulk.
There's nothing
Sweet
wrong
Christmas.
With that.
But
big beautiful black man, big beautiful green man. I'm just saying,
but he's
it's happened
angry.
On the internet.
He's always angry.
It's happening right now on the internet.
It's in the dark net somewhere.
I can just hear Tony, like Tony Stark. We need a Luke. We need a lullaby.
Then the next Avengers movie.
There will be a new Avengers movie. There has to be in Phase 4.
I just love the idea, like if they were actually sleeping together, and Tony busts in, it's like, "Fucking Banner, get out of here!" And Luke's like, "Oh shit, don't make him angry."
Hold on, extra 5 minutes,
right now. Don't make him clench his teeth.
I'm just saying, that's a whole new meaning to tossing salad.
All right, guys, let's go to final thoughts. We've obviously already given our numbers, but let's go to the last things we want to say about this. We're at an hour. Wow, we had some stuff to say.
Well,
Harris?
I think the show had its flaws, which we've all covered in great depth, but I think it's a really important show, both in terms of really advancing where superhero narratives can go, but also with just the complexity of the characters, the nature of the topics that were covered in this, with the abuse. And I really think that, as much as I've become a Marvel fanboy for everything except Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this is probably the most mature, most complex, and most well-written, if not necessarily well-paced, show they have done ever.
Okay. Bo?
As I said, very, very glowing in my praise, and yes, there are definitely flaws with this. There are things that, you know, I could easily make a wish list of stuff that I wish they had done. But all in all, it holds up really, really well for me. And yeah, I think in a way I enjoyed this even more than Daredevil. It was, you know, just so easy for me to fall in love with this character and, you know, just really, really be interested in her journey. For me, it's definitely one of the best things that Marvel has done, and it's yet another testament to, like, you know, the long running format is the perfect format for superhero stuff. It just is.
Randy? I loved the first six or seven episodes of this and liked the remainder. Despite all the flaws, this is a great show. I liked Daredevil better, but I thought this was a really great show. And if you liked it, go read the four volumes of Alias because you're going to like those too.
Is there a place you could get those?
Yeah. Well, you could go to Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas.
What?
If you can get there.
Past the wall.
If you can get past Kilgrave.
He stands right at the end and welcome to Round Rock sign.
He goes, go to Austin Books.
No, he doesn't.
No, he does not.
He does not say that because we all love Rogues Gallery. Herman?
I'm going to pretty much echo what Randy said. I mean, I don't think this is as good as Daredevil. I still think it has a few problems, a few annoying characters who just shouldn't have been in the show. But the standouts to me are Kristen Ritter's Jessica Jones. I think she's perfect. I was shocked by how, you know, exactly she was like Jessica Jones from the comic. And again, for David Tennant, someone who has not watched Doctor Who, unlike everyone here, I was just very impressed with his performance in general. My biggest complaint with so many of Marvel's films, even though I enjoy most of them, is it's the villain. The villain is always underwritten. Even like this year's Ant-Man, an actor like Corey Stoll playing that, you know, a villain, it's like you're going to expect to get a good performance out of him. It's like, not really. Even James Spader's Ultron, I thought he was really underserved by the dialogue he was given. Here, David Tennant is completely menacing as Kilgrave, and I was just shocked by it. And to me, I think he's probably on the same level as Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin. Definitely watch it.
Sarah?
I think the biggest flaws of this are more in the TV making of it. There was a lot that needed to be cut out, and it was just too long. The fight scenes were not very good. But that being said, this is maybe the first TV series that has a female character who is not a very nice person. You don't want to really hang out with her. She's not sweet. She doesn't use her sexiness or sex appeal to get what she wants, which is a breath of fresh air, like you would not believe. And it's an important piece on trauma and sexual violence and rape and the patriarchy and all of that joyful stuff. So I think it's more important to watch than Daredevil. Daredevil was better made, but it's a thing that I think 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people are going to remember as that was kind of the first TV series that did this. So, you know what? I'm going to change my review. I'm gonna change my score.
Is Martin here?
Where's Martin? I'm gonna up it a little bit. I'm gonna do that two score thing again.
You're vastly developing a trademark here.
Just fuck it. For actual TV show-ness, it still is going to get a 7. But for please watch this, no matter who you are, men, women, people who fancy themselves MRAs should watch this for sure. Actually, I think we should strap them down a Clockwork Orange style and force them to watch it. How do you like that for forcing someone to do something? I'm going to give...
No superpower here, yeah, just bungee cord.
Just bungee cord. And eye drops. I give it a 9 out of 10 feminists who are me.
I was going to say, Elliot, if Martin was here, we would have talked about Luke Cage more. But anyway,
I've actually been consciously trying not to talk about him too much because this series does such a good job of not focusing on him. he's there to introduce him and to ground Jessica's world, but it still is Jessica Jones' show. I like this show at its root just because it advances Marvel in what they're doing. And I said it earlier, but it really, to me, retroactively makes a lot of stuff that came before it better. Because the fact that this stuff exists in that shared universe lets me know that they're aware of it. They're just making choices in their other media to best promote their brand. So, like, Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron and Ant-Man, they're not going to have that tone that people may want, but they're just saying, we want this genre, we want a comedy for Ant-Man, we want a big budget action movie for Avengers, we want a more of a tech heist thing for Iron Man, we want these different atmospheres, and this is showing that, hey, we have that club in our bag, we just choose not to do it. So it's not that the talent's not there, it's that they choose not to do it. And also, I just think it's advancing superhero shows into what they can be. And it's really frustrating as a comic book fan, because, like, my dad, he'll watch these. Like, he'll watch all the Marvel stuff. He watched Daredevil. He'll be like, man, that's some great stuff. I'm like, well, what about the comics? He's like, no, they're doing it better now. I'm like, they're doing it exactly the same. But that's great, because it's introducing new people. Because, I mean, the only reason I started reading comic books was the X-Men cartoon in 1992. And if you can keep on, like, bringing in new people, you can keep on growing that market. You can keep on having these good stories. Because, I mean, all the stories that they pull from, none of it's been original. It's been little tweaks and little combinations, but it's just so good to see that the superhero brand is coming up, especially from, like, late 90s. Marvel was bankrupt. DC was in the shitter. Like, you know, the fact that the comic book industry is where it's at is amazing. I look at this as a recognition of just how great things are, that we are in a continued, at this point, 10-year golden age of being a comic book fan. This show just makes me take stock and go, damn, it feels good to be a comic book fan.
I feel like Elliot's going to cry. It's okay.
It's right here with you. That was the Bill Pullman Independence Day speech.
Yeah. Just like,
the whole way.
Jessica Jones is our Independence Day.
I was going for more St. Christmas, but yes.
Honestly, I want to hug Elliot right now.
I know. I think that, like, this is Marvel taking the first shot, real shot at Sabal, of saying, we're willing to go into our max line in our filmed entertainment. Yeah. We're willing to say, we can tell mature adult stories that there's actually a lot of real stuff to think about in our superhero world. We can do that. We're obviously not going to do it in our big movies as much, because people bring their 10-year-olds. But Netflix is, the idea is, it's television. That's where your parents are going to, like, okay, this show's just for mommy and daddy, as Randy has illustrated also. I think what I like best about the show is just that it's, I always prefer shows with deeply flawed protagonists. And I love that we get the chance, as opposed to a movie even, we get so much more time to get to know her. Kristen Ritter really, really nails it so well that I was just with this from beginning. And if for no other reason, not for the other reasons I listed, than just the fact I think she was the perfect cast person. Yeah. I remember I was so sad in Breaking Bad when she left the show, because I was like, I love Kristen Ritter. I'm such a big fan. Yeah. And she just was so great on that show. And I was like, no, I thought she was going to be a regular.
It's really, if you have been paying attention to her career, it's like everything has led to this.
She
herself is saying, like, this is the most important role I've ever had. I've loved this so much.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this was great stuff. I probably enjoyed it as much as I did Daredevil, but at the same time admired it significantly more.
Yeah.
At the same time. So
fair.
Anyway, that's our Jessica Jones review.
Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it.